It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
What do you plan to do after the All-Star game to get better?
Buy you a new jacket.
Film lovers, stay warm. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soce. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog, which we'll update someday at...
Someday. Filmsociology.tumblr.com.
And the show is also heard Sundays at 4 o'clock. Someday, somewhere, we might do a whole new show on a Sunday.
Someday on a Sunday.
Someday. And if you email or send us a tweet at Matthew Soce or... What's your Twitter? Do you have at
Kobe Slater.
Not at Foo.
No, I feel like we have a lot of things that are hard to spell. Like our blog's hard to spell, your name.
Sorry, my name is not hard to spell. I've been doing it for 44 years. Anyway, someday if we do a new show on
when
a Sunday.
We do a new show.
That's right, when. Send us a note via Twitter or Facebook or email, and you... Yes, you might get a prize package from the Royal We. So, anyway, stay warm out there. This is, you know what? This is it, on one hand, I say this is a good time to just stay in and stay warm and get a stack of movies you've never seen before. You probably have a stack. I don't know about. I know. Okay, not everybody, but I have a stack of movies that I've purchased over time that I've not even touched. And this weekend would be a great opportunity to. Make that pile a little smaller, or I guess in some cases it's a very big day today, so you can watch something of a romantic nature.
Yes,
it's Valentine's Day.
Yes.
So happy Valentine's Day to everybody, and happy birthday to Mrs. Soce, which was 2 days ago. 2 days, two different sets of flowers.
Hey.
I've learned that. So anyway, we have guests coming in a little bit. I know Bittersweet Bianca is supposed to come in as soon as the Huskies get their second catch their second wind.
Yeah.
They're refilling the brandy barrels under their chins, but she's going to come in and talk a little bit about Shirley Temple. And a little later on in the show, I'm very excited about this. We have a gentleman that we've been wanting to get on the show for quite a while. And notice I say guy, so it's not a female from the Food Network. But John Vickers... The managing director, the grand poobah of IU Cinema, is going to be on the show to talk about a very special event that they were able to whip up in a very short amount of time, and it's going to be very, very cool. Kobe, I had a moment. I don't know what it is about your alma mater, but when I talked to John Finley, this was, and full disclosure, this was one of those, you know, you send a tweet and then you send an email and voicemail and back and forth. And, you know, we each say the same thing. We got to talk.
Yeah.
And we finally did. But John is committed, not necessarily today because of the weather, but John is committed to coming up here and doing the show live.
Awesome.
So, which would be really awesome. He knows of the show. And he knows of your segment.
Very cool.
And I started to feel, first, I mean, we have guests all the time. We've had actors and directors and Food Network people and radio personalities and TV people. We do that all the time. But there is something really special when they've actually heard your show.
It's a real show.
Elmore Leonard said so.
And people know it.
And it's terrific. And so, you know, if I'm interviewing somebody like Padma Lachmi or Claire Robinson or Robert Irvine, I know they're not listening to the show. I would love to hear Robert tell Gail, come to the computer. It's 5 o'clock Friday. Listen to the show. I know that doesn't happen. But the fact that John knows the show,
it
reminded me of David Baker saying he knew about my blues show.
Oh, yes.
Because I don't have to call him doctor. I can call him David, and I started turning into Tim Tebow all of a sudden. You like my show? It's really cool because I play jazz artists that do blues, and it's really cool, and it's a nice variety. Will you tell Quincy about my show? Will you tell Quincy's daughter about my show? Because seriously, I thought I was going to be that dumb. Anyway.
We ran into him. We sat with him at the Jazz Kitchen one night, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Yes. We mm-hmm. did. And
I had him for a couple classes, actually.
You had a couple classes, and of course, like a jerk, I had to say, well, I got to spend quality time with David.
Yeah, it was right here on this. In this
I think we have that in the sound clip
ago.
Somewhere.
Yeah. But I had him for a couple classes. Wow, great. I got to spend quality time with him. In the one-upsmanship aisle, everybody, Matthew Soucy.
Sponsored by Haterade, cynical snark since 1969. Ding!
There you go.
Anyway, but yeah, David's very, very cool, and we should get David on the show. Now, if he can travel up, that would be fine as well. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, for some reason, there's not one, not two. What? What? What?
Oh, no, I, okay, never mind. I thought you were going this to this place, and you are. Continue.
Okay. I'll start again. Drink your tea. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we have not one, not two, but three film remakes.
For some reason.
For some reason, opening in theaters today. It's days like this that the film world wants to turn me into a crusty old man so I can berate about the lack of originality. Well, that's not the case. You just have to dig deeper for original material. But we have opening today a remake of About Last Night. Now, the original production, based on the David Mamet play Sexual Perversity in Chicago. Not a title that fits well, I think, at the mall.
No.
At the multiplexes. So mm-hmm. They called it About Last Night. It was Rob Lowe, Demi Moore, and Jim Belushi and Elizabeth Berkley, if I'm remembering correctly. Not that, you know, it's a good play, not that good of a film. But they remade it with an African-American cast, most notably Kevin Hart. Mm-hmm. So there's that. There's a remake of Endless Love, which was the originally 1981 Franco Zeffirelli melodrama with Brooke Shields, where two young people are passionate in love with each other and their families won't let them be together, and the man torched a house over Brooke Shields. I've never felt that strongly about her. So Raquel Welch, Ann Margaret, Pam Grier, maybe, but torching a house for 1981 Brooke Shields, as your coffee cup says, Kobe,
nope.
No. And the one that was getting a lot of talk, and I think it got a trailer was played during the Super Bowl, but a remake of RoboCop is now out in theaters from
We've been seeing trailers for this for some time.
Quite a while. 1987 Paul Verhoeven action satire. And a lot of people didn't quite get the satire. They just liked the guy idea of a man in metal gear shooting stuff up. Well, it's been remade because apparently people don't want to watch movies from the 80s because, as we all know, Kobe, the 80s.
Totally different time.
Totally different time. So there's a remake, and same storyline. It's set in futuristic Detroit. Thanks a lot for that. you're enjoying that.
Yeah.
And or as Jarrett Moore reminded me, RoboCop's done more for Detroit than Joe Dumars or Barry Gordy.
And Barry Gordy.
But of course, it's set in the not so near future, or actually it's near future, and crime is terrible. And a company run by Michael Keaton decides to first they make drones, which are not allowed on American soil. We have some political commentary going on here, and we have a police officer who is blown up in an accident, and they decide to put the remains of his body into a metallic police officer body.
And into a RoboCop?
Into a RoboCop, exactly. So, is that fair, Sweet Bianca?
Yes.
She's on her way, folks. So there's that. And that's kind of the gist of it. Now, along the way, we have Gary Oldman playing the scientist, the head doctor on this. Nice to see Gary Oldman not playing a raging psychotic. I mean, he's played Commissioner Gordon and Bob Cratchit, but I like when he gets to downplay it. Michael Keaton's in this, as I said. Samuel L. Jackson shows up for a few scenes, not Lawrence Fishburne, as we've learned from that was just a bad interview.
Yeah. And not the other black credit card guy either.
Not the other black credit card guy or the black guy that was hauling Miller High Life beer in and out. So, but
just
yeah,
terrible.
Jackson shows up completely, almost in a different movie, as a right wing TV personality. You see, the irony is because Samuel L. Jackson is a probably very liberal African American, and he's playing a conservative character with a wig because Sam doesn't have hair at the moment. So because apparently, if you're African American, you're more liberal and not conservative. But he's playing a conservative in the movie.
Okay.
And he's not Lawrence Fishburne. Just so we're clear on that.
Does he do anything else?
Well, you know what? It's funny. It's the film is best summed up by Jackson's last scene in the film, and I'm not really giving away anything. But there's talk about these robots that are allowed overseas. There's an opening sequence where they're on the they're on patrol in Iran, and but they're not allowed in the U.S. because half the country doesn't want robots making the law and enforcing the law. So you know what this is? Social commentary.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we want from our mindless action films.
Yep.
Now, the original Paul Verhoeven RoboCop, which I haven't seen in a long time, but praise for its satire, because you had a really violent movie. It almost got an NC-17 rating when it first came out in 1987, and part of why it was satire was the vigilante nature, the law enforcement nature, and how over-the-top violent the film was. I mean, this is 1987. Not every other action film was shot like a video game in the late 80s, and this one was. And, of course, now it's kind of like Michael Douglas in Wall Street or Leonardo DiCaprio in Wolf of Wall Street. People are more inspired than repelled by the action of the original RoboCop. So, anyway, back to Jackson's last scene. Samuel Jackson's character on camera has a meltdown, and he gets to spout out some obscenities in a Samuel L. Jackson kind of way. Which everybody enjoys, except
RoboCop?
In this movie, because it's a TV show, it's bleeped. See? So that's kind of how this film is. You're making a PG-13 remake of an R-rated satire, and you get there's a little satire, there's a little bit like the TV, you know, like because we've never seen political pundits made fun of on TV before,
right?
Never, nope. And we have, of course, the video game stylings, you know, from from RoboCop's point of view, where everything is digital and everything has targets and reports and all that. And then we have the military trainer played by Oscar nominee Jackie Earle Haley, who doesn't like RoboCop and starts calling him Tin Man. So guess what he does? For an exercise, he plays If I Only Had a Heart from The Wizard. See what they're doing there?
Yep.
Yeah. And by the way, when you end your closing credits with the Clash's version of I Fought the Law, that's hard-hitting, groundbreaking satire if there ever was one. So you have these. So you have Gary Oldman, you have Michael Keaton, you have Samuel L. Jackson, who they're fine. They're they're brought in to do stuff. The lead, we have the guy. I'm not sure. He was in The Killing, the series The Killing, I believe.
Yes.
Check on that.
Yes, Joel Kinnaman.
Yes, Joel Kinnaman, who's got barely a pulse. Now, you know, especially compared to Peter Weller. But what else has he done of note?
Well, let's see.
There's no presence, really.
Lola Versus in 2012, Safe House.
No, you've not seen that because Ryan Reynolds is in it. Mm. And you'll only see it if Denzel Washington beats Ryan Reynolds to a bloody pulp.
Yeah. Yeah. The Darkest Hour, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
American or Swedish?
2011.
That would be American.
There you go.
Speak American. Yeah.
Looks like
that's
a
about
lot
it.
Of, yeah.
Okay. So, and the direct tell
a lot
me
of German stuff.
Oh boy. Like. Uh oh. No. Check where he's from. Don't tell Middle America.
Sweden.
Now you've done it. Now you've done it. You're going to tell people that RoboCop, a Detroit American hero, is played by a Swede. Mm. Way to go, Kobe. Way to crush the dreams.
It's the truth.
It's the truth. Yeah, that is that what we deliver here?
It's the truth.
Carl the Truth Williams. Who directed RoboCop? Because it sure as hell wasn't Paul Verhoeven.
RoboCop. One moment as we search here. RoboCop. Oh. Jose Padilla.
Also Swedish.
Oh, Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, August 1st, 1967.
Uh huh. Which is, of course, the Sweden of South America. Oh, by the way, Cool Down, Saturday night, 7 o'clock on HD2.
That's right.
Any other directing credits on that?
Let me go back here as we search through.
First feature.
Jose Padilla.
So,
directing. Yep.
Commercials, video, short films. Anyway. So it's not hella bad, but it's just not necessary. That's really sums it up.
You just go see that in the theater, you laugh about it, and you go home.
Or laugh at it.
There you go.
Yeah. And this was a film that my childhood has not been violated because they made a remake of RoboCop. It's just not needed. I don't need it. Mm-hmm. So there is that. Let's see. Oh, and A Winter's Tale. Winter's Tale, not Shakespeare's. I guess this is a fantasy novel with Colin Farrell, Russell Crowe, Jennifer Connelly. There's and Jessica Brown Findlay of Downton Abbey.
Oh.
We'll have to bring this up when she gets here.
Okay.
Another film you don't have to go see. But it's love, and there's some time travel, and it's weepy, and it opens on Valentine's Day, because why else wouldn't you? Okay. The other big news, because forget RoboCop. I'm really excited when this comes, The Town. But the one of the benefits of having art cinemas in bigger cities, more cities now, and it's this time of year, is you get a chance, and it opened today, but you get a chance to check out the Oscar-nominated short films and the live-action short films. And Emma and I got to watch these this past week. And they're quite good. There's not really a dud in the bunch, especially while they're nominated. So with live action, we'll start with and also you can read Ed Johnson Knott's. He's pretty thorough in his write-ups on these in Nouveau. It was in last week's Nouveau.net. But we have Just Before Losing Everything, which is a very tense story that unfolds nicely of a woman on the run with her kids from her abusive husband, and they go to her place of work while he is following her. We have Helium, which is a story of a terminally ill young man at a hospital and an employee who tells him the story not of heaven, but of helium. And that was very uplifting. The Vorman Problem, which stars Martin Freeman, for you Hobbit fans out there, and Tom Hollander. And this is great because I think Tom has now graduated from that guy status to, I'm remembering his name, Tom Hollander, who I saw last week in About Time, but he is also the misspeaking politician from In the Loop, the one who is under the wrath of Malcolm Tucker.
Oh, that guy.
See, that's what I did there. So I'm going to try to remember his name more. But it's a story of a psychiatrist who visits a man who believes he is God. So check that out. Next page. And then we have That Wasn't Me, which was a pretty intense drama of humanitarian workers who are captured while traveling in Africa. And then a quick little short film called Do I Have to Take Care of Everything, which feels a little bit, it's a family that wakes up and they have to attend a wedding. And it kind of has a Four Weddings and a Funeral feel at the beginning where everybody sleeps in and they're late. One of those. But it's short and it's sweet.
So the shorts are in theaters.
The shorts are in the theaters. As well as now the animated features, we have Possessions, which I believe is Emma's favorite of the lot. It's a Japanese animated film. I guess it's an old myth of a man lost in the woods who encounters a house, and he winds up having to repair things, starting with parasols and other to yarn to fabric. I mean, visually, very impressive. Great colors, great detail. We have Mr. Hublot, which is, I guess, has been compared to Terry Gilliam's animated work. It's in a futuristic mechanical world about a man with who brings in a stray mechanical dog, and the dog gets bigger and bigger. It has a kind of a robot's feel, only darker, not as colorful. But very cool. Get a Horse, which was the Disney short before Frozen. You've seen?
Oh, I'm trying.
Have you and Bianca seen? That's
yes,
the,
we
it's,
saw.
It's black. Remember, it's black, Mickey and Minnie and the bad guy
yes,
in
yes,
black
yes.
and white.
Yes,
not,
yes.
Not outstanding, but still fun, still mm-hmm. amusing.
Not as good as Paper Man.
No, not as good as Paper Man. Room on the Broom, which is narrated by Simon Pegg and features the voices of Gillian Anderson and Timothy Spall. Gillian Anderson, now one of my favorite witches. She's a witch who has a dog and a cat and more animals that she keeps tagging onto her broom. Sorry, I'm an X-Files guy. And then Feral, which was a story which reminded me of Francois Truffaut's Wild Child, about a young boy raised by wolves in the wilderness and then brought into society. Or, not if it's not Wild Child, Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan, only raised by wolves and not by apes. So, anyway, it's a great opportunity. You always see the, I mean, as a kid, I remember seeing this category in the Academy Awards, which, by the way, March 2nd on ABC. But you would see, you know, maybe a small clip of the movie, and then, you know, it never come to town. You know, unless you paid attention to some place like IU Cinema or mm-hmm. a college campus, but these shorts would never come. Well, within the last decade or so, because of art houses, because of the interwebs, you're able to check out these films. So I would say, ladies and gentlemen, if you're going to go out, and this is part of the yes, it's okay to go out in the dead of winter campaign, even though most people had to leave the building at 4 today, you can go out and see things. Restaurants, musicians, music venues, bars, theaters.
They're all still there.
They're still there. Waiting for your dollars. They need them now more than ever because we all go out in warm weather. Now's a chance to go out. So if you don't want to watch the stack of DVDs or Blu-rays on your in your living room, I understand. It's a tall order. You can go check out some of the shorts at Landmark.
Now, I'd also been hearing, and it's still in theaters. Did you see Ride Along?
I did not.
Okay.
Chris,
that's been getting a lot of good press.
It's been like number one
in the box office for like 3 weeks straight now.
Yes, and Film Yap's Chris Lloyd in his write-up dubbed it an early contender for worst film of 2014.
Okay.
So there is that.
Okay.
So anyway, there's a balance of those. Now, Kobe, could you check the IMA? I believe Lou Harry, one of my IFJA colleagues, is still introducing the film tonight. They are not canceling everything. That's the other thing. I'm directing a show. I can't have any more rehearsals canceled because of weather.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I drove to work. So should you. Anyway, by the way, born yesterday, Scottish Rite Cathedral, March 7th and 8th, 14th and 15th. More babbling about that as the month goes on. Kobe, what is happening at the IMA? I know they are. I think the rest of the winter film series are silent movies.
Tonight, 7:30, IMA, The Strong Man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, go check that out. And tell Lou Harry we said hi.
Yes.
And you heard it on a real show, and it's terrific. So, and we'll have my chat with John Vickers in a little bit. Kobe, what is happening at your alma mater?
IU Cinema this weekend, Friday, February 14th at 6:30. That's tonight. We have Underground Alice. Do you know it?
Nope.
From 1968.
Okay, cool.
Experimental fantasy.
Category. On Valentine's Day. Love mm-hmm. it. See, it's not just for rom-coms anymore. Good.
And also, 9:30 tonight, The Rocket. Foreign language drama from this year. So
okay, cool.
Perhaps something debuting there tonight at 9:30. tomorrow, Saturday the 15th, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, The Purple Rose of Cairo.
Fine, fine Woody Allen film. Don't stop reading the papers about it. It's a beautifully made picture with Mia Farrell and Jeff Daniels, story of a woman who loves the movie so much that the lead actor in the movie, played by Jeff Daniels, leaps off the screen, literally, and starts running around in the real world. Trivia. Another actor was cast in that role. They had already started filming it. Allen didn't like it and replaced him with Jeff Daniels. Michael Keaton.
Oh.
There you go.
Really?
Yes, really. So anyway, Purple Rose, definitely. You may not like Woody Allen as a person, and this is when he's not in it, because I know people that are really dumb about that. I only see Woody Allen films when he's not in them. Well, this is one of those, so go check that out.
So we got Purple Rose of Cairo at 3 o'clock tomorrow, Saturday, February 15th at IU Cinema. Then 7 o'clock, remember last week we were talking about this, and I was talking about the different series that they have at IU Cinema.
Yes.
One of which was the South Asian gangster films.
Which I'm all for.
Yeah, well, tomorrow night, IU Cinema, 7 o'clock, 2003's Makbul.
All right.
Do you know it?
I should. You should too.
I think I've heard of it, but I have not seen it.
Okay.
So there's that. And then Sunday, February 16th, 3 o'clock, Beyond the Hills from last year. And then Coriolanus at 6:30. National Theater Live.
Ah, that's National Theater Live. Okay. So, yeah, they do those as well. I know Landmark does them, and AMC Fathom events where you can watch live plays and live operas and the occasional live concert in theater. So that's Coriolanus. Not the Ralph Fiennes directed and starring film, but this is a live stage performance of Coriolanus.
Yes.
Nice bloody story from Bill Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm. And then we have Monday the 17th at 7 p.m., A Normal Life, Please, 2009 foreign language documentary. And then Tuesday the 18th, we have the 24-hour film tribute, Philip Seymour Hoffman. But more on that coming up later.
Or should we? Yeah, let's go through the Blu-ray title, DVD and Blu-ray titles. And actually, we'll take a break, do the DVD Blu-ray titles. Hopefully Bianca will be here. We'll have a chat with John Vickers about the festival we just mentioned. Fair Sweet Bianca will have a retrospect and an appreciation of Shirley Temple. And we have lots of dead people we like.
There's a pretty big one this week.
Well, there's several big ones. So and we never have time for dead people we don't like. You all right over there?
Yeah, I'm
ready?
Good.
You ready to go?
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Gail Kim, and you're listening to Film Sociology.
Thank you, Gail. She and Robert are right in front of the computer right now listening to this show.
That was for you guys.
We'd like to think that happens. Although, however, hello Fort Myers and hello California.
That's right.
We know you're listening. Appreciate it. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Soci. All right, we're gonna shift plans. We're going to change plans here at Film Sociology. I'm the host. I can do that. And Kobe's ready for it.
Thanks.
Did I let you know?
And Kobe is ready.
Kobe is ready because there'll be times that, you know, we've done this work. you know how I go. We've been working together for a while. Then there's no audio.
2 minute signal. All right, here's some words to live by. Oh man.
Anyway, but before the break, Kobe was going through the IU Cinema schedule, and in a very impressive feat, John Vickers, the director of IU Cinema and his band of renown, they were able to collect enough prints, not downloads, not Blu-rays, not DVDs, actual prints of films for a free 24-hour Philip Seymour Hoffman Festival, which is going to run February 18th and the 19th. It's free. It's at IU Cinema. And I got to talk to John finally. So, and John will hopefully be in studio very soon because we would love for him to hang out here. And there could be a possible film sociology trek down south.
Awesome.
That would be phenomenal. Do we have couches to crash on down there?
We can hang out in the weekend dorm.
Do we? Yeah, you know, South Campus is lovely this time of year.
It is. It's real nice.
So, are you at the point now? Do you know anybody still a student in school? Are you past that?
Yes, I do. I know I have one friend who is still a student down there.
Really? Can we crash there?
I don't know where he lives.
So we can't do that. Hey man, what's
hey,
up?
Man.
Hey,
what's going on?
You got some floor?
Yeah. I'll just chill right here.
Cool. I remember the day. I think I was when I was living in Chicago, and we were talking about old friends, and then I realized, hey, I don't know anybody at Ball State anymore. I'm going to have to actually get a motel room the next time I go down. Damn. Anyway, sorry. Reminiscing. Anyway, here's my chat with IU Cinema director John Vickers about Philip Seymour Hoffman's legacy and the 24-hour Philip Seymour Hoffman Film Festival. John, my first question is, what is the first thing you think of when you think of Philip Seymour Hoffman's body of work?
When I think of Hoffman's body of work, I think immediately think of breadth or depth. He just had an incredible range. He could play, you know, very intense characters as well as soft-spoken, self-reflecting characters and do them all very well. So I think the range is, I think, what I think of most.
And I think for a lot of people, we talked about this obviously on the show last week, but you know, he was a that guy in films like Twister and Scent of a Woman, and then there was that kind of 1-2 punch of Happiness and Boogie Nights, and
right.
It seemed like that was the range where he could play losers and schlubs, and those were two very different, torn, isolated characters.
Yeah, but and I don't think. I mean, certainly he wasn't typecast into those types of characters because
no.
Then he would also go on to play very confident, you know, characters like the villain in Mission Impossible or The Master.
Or Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So that's where I think the beauty lies is in his ability to do all of those things very well.
Yeah, and I think also the fact is he had the career I think a lot of actors wanted was he could star in an independent film, he can, you know, be a secondary or be a villain in a mainstream movie, he could do plays. The one thing about his death is more people have talked about Along Came Polly than ever
right.
before because of his appearance in that film.
Right, right. No, I guess rightfully so. But certainly that's not a film that defines him because he, you know, he wasn't a leading man in the sense of a Hollywood leading man where it's pretty much all, I don't want to say love stories or, you know, perfect dramatic roles. I mean, he did play dysfunctional very well. He did play very intense characters very well. But like we said, I mean, he can then reverse that and, you know, go in the complete opposite direction. You know, I'm reminded of actually in some ways of Orson Welles and some of his characters that he's played. And I think maybe the confidence and the charisma that a larger man might have on screen. And I don't know why, but I was just thinking about that this morning that his character in The Master reminded me so much of Orson Welles.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. You're right.
Yeah, and but then throughout his career, then you look back at some of the other roles he played, and he does have this, I don't know, he has this confidence, even though, Well, I shouldn't say that because all the characters don't. But there's something that comes across that just, you know, gave me this thought of Wells this morning. And anyway, I'm rambling.
No, you're right, because I think, of course, he won an Oscar for Capote, and there's a balance of insecurity and confidence and being able to see those, especially because for a lot of people, they just knew Capote as that weird guy on TV, and we got to see much more than that.
Right, yeah, and I think I just heard something the other day that when he was preparing for Capote, he stayed in character on and off screen for 36 days or something that. And can you imagine carrying that persona around with you 24 hours a day during that shoot? I mean, incredible, really. And the voice, you know, to get that that voice for that long. But, amazing. I think that's – I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
What I really appreciate about his work is the dedication. I mean, it just seems like he – was so dedicated to the craft and the art, and it comes across in his films. I can't think of a single role that he was in where I questioned, you know, am I watching Philip Seymour Hoffman or am I absorbed into this character? Where, you know, there are other fine actors that occasionally I'll think, wow, you know, he or she's overdoing that a bit, I've never been pulled out of character watching a performance of his.
I'll say it, phoning it in. You're right. I've never seen that from Hoffman. Even something as small as like Moneyball with his great baseball gut.
Right. Yeah, and he can be in amongst some, you know, really fantastic actors and still walk away owning that scene. I mean, I think that's part of the beauty of looking at his filmography is, you know, many of his roles weren't huge, but, you know, he owns those scenes that he's in, and, you know, pretty incredible. The films wouldn't be the same without him.
Yeah, if you go to IMDb, folks, and you really should, or check out the schedule at IU, but it is one of the most impressive bodies of work for that amount of time, and it's also going to be one of the great what could have beens. I mean, I know he played Willie Loman in his 40s, which is a tad young, but, I would love to have seen him tackle that in about 15 or 20 years.
Yeah, same here. And you know, likely he would have done it again, maybe in 15 and 20 or 20 years.
Totally.
Yeah, it's a huge loss. And I remember when we lost Heath Ledger, and I thought that was a huge loss as well because so much potential. But this has affected I think us a lot more.
So with that in mind, IU Cinema is doing a 24-hour Philip Seymour Hoffman marathon. How did you guys arrange this so quickly?
Yeah, because we have a great staff. And so we were approached by a donor who said, you know, are you going to do anything with Philip Seymour Hoffman? His name's Jim Sherman, film lover, and we have very similar tastes in films and filmmakers. And I said, you know, we would love to, but we have one day open between now and the end of September, other than spring break. And if we were going to do something, I'd like to do something big. And so in conversation, this is what came out of that. And so, yes, we're trying to do it big. We're trying to do it to the same level of intensity that maybe Philip Seymour Hoffman brought to his roles. And so we're showing 12 films over the course of what's really 26 hours. Beginning at 4 p.m. on Tuesday, February 18th.
And as far as getting the prints, how much did you have to borrow? Did everybody go running to their house?
No. I mean, we're showing everything in theatrical formats.
Okay.
So it's complicated, and so it's contacting the studios, finding out who has a print, or you know, the new digital technology is a DCP, digital cinema package. And in some cases, we have to play from HD, but we're showing everything in an acceptable theatrical format that is going to look fantastic and sound fantastic on our screen. But then that also influenced, you know, where certain things fit in the 24 hours, because we want to try to automate as much of the, you know, late night, early morning shifts as we can, so we can handle it as a staff. So a number of things played into this, but there were some great titles that we would have loved to screen that are not available from the studios in DCP or film prints and only on DVD, and we just had to shy away from some of those, like one of those being Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. Great performance.
Yep.
But you know, we would have had to screen a DVD, and we, you know, didn't want to do that for this tribute.
I totally. You could have had my Blu-ray if that was if that would have done anything, but.
You know, I don't. I didn't even know it was released on Blu-ray, and I. But I think it was at one point. But yeah. Anyway, yeah. So those things influenced the decisions. But we did work very quickly at trying to get this, you know, to work to happen. It wouldn't have happened if it weren't for this film lover and Jim Sherman and his wife Roberta, who contributed to this because, you know, we're paying screening fees for 12 films in this 24-hour period, which gets expensive. So. So anyway, kudos to them for you know, for stepping up and wanting this to happen.
How long did it take from the moment the idea of the festival was made to the time you got the last film? What was the window of time on that?
Yeah, I'd say 5 days.
Wow.
I think we had all of our requests in the studios within a couple days. And then just weeding out what, you know, what was available and what wasn't, and then reshifting the schedule accordingly, and, you know, et cetera. But yeah, it was just yesterday that we had final confirmation, and then immediately put it on the web and press release. And, you know, we also want to get audience here. I mean, we want to fill the place for as much of this 24 hours as we can. And being free certainly helps that, and being able to come and go without tickets, you know, certainly helps that too.
What have this talking to the studios? Are other theaters across the country doing anything like this?
I don't think to this level of intensity. There are many theaters that are doing tributes, and in fact, some prints weren't available until April. So, I mean, there are folks that are, you know, some of these films that have very limited prints are booked up, like I said, until April. So. Yeah, so others are paying tribute, but I don't know of anybody else that's doing a round-the-clock event like this.
So, ladies and gentlemen, this is a rare, rare treat. Also, the fact that I love the idea of a 24-hour marathon in college, because that's what you're supposed to do in college or in your 20s, or if the family's gone for the week. But anyway, that's my thing on that. Go ahead and go through the lineup so people know when to plan accordingly or bring sleeping bags or something.
And I'll give you approximate start times.
Okay.
It's all, you know, tied to the published run times. But we kick it off at 4 p.m. with Jack Goes Boating on Tuesday the 18th. It's the only film that Philip Seymour Hoffman also directed as well as had the lead in. Then at roughly 5:40 p.m., The Savages. He and Laura Linney play brother-sister, caring for their ailing father. At 7:40 p.m. on Tuesday the 18th, The Master. At 10:10 p.m., Mission Impossible 3. On Wednesday the 19th at 12:20 a.m., Almost Famous, where, of course, he plays the iconic role of Lester Bangs. Wednesday the 19th at 2:25 a.m., A Late Quartet, which is a film from a couple years ago. Wednesday the 19th at 4:15, Doubt. 6:15 a.m., Synecdoche, New York, which is a really bizarre, interesting film.
And a lot of people have said possibly his best performance.
You know, it's an incredible performance. You know, I've seen the film once on screen, and I'm dying to see it again because I can frankly say I don't think I understood it all. So I'm looking forward to seeing it again. 8:20 a.m., Magnolia.
Oh, my God. What a way to start the morning.
Yeah, no kidding. Followed by 11:35 a.m., Boogie Nights. And then 2:15 p.m. on Wednesday, Capote. And then we're wrapping it up at 4:15 p.m. with Owning Mahoney, which we threw in there because it is a film that is dealing with addiction. In this case, it's gambling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we think people will walk away with at least some thoughts about that. And, you know, I think we're going to also tie to other things around the university over the next couple weeks about addiction or about substance abuse. And we're going to try to, you know, play this further and give some educational opportunities as well. So anyway, but this is not about that. This is about celebrating the work of this really great artist.
And it's a nice mix because there's some titles like Owning Mahoney and A Late Quartet and even Jack Goes Boating that I don't think enough people have seen, and they get a chance to see it on a big screen.
Yeah, agreed. It was important to show some of those smaller films, especially, you know, he had major roles in those as well. So, Yeah, I think it is important to see those.
Yeah, and if folks want to watch the opening scene of Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, you can do it in the privacy of your own home and don't tell us about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and, you know, if we had 48 hours, you know, I think we could do a more complete look at his career. But, you know, you have to make choices. And, you know, there are certainly things in his filmography that should be considered to be part of this. But that's for everyone else to explore beyond this 24 hours.
John, I have a blue show, and there are times where an entire show is recommended to one artist, and it feels like it's not enough. So I totally get it.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we one title that we would have in here that we don't, and that's Happiness, but we screened it about a year and a half ago in the cinema, and so we wanted this to be fresh with,
sure.
I think, all of these titles that have not screened in the cinema as yet.
And now that you mentioned it, I'm like, where would you put it? Because, you know, maybe in the Magnolia Boogie Nights Smile Fest, but yeah.
Right, exactly. No, this, you know, we have a lot of patrons that have already committed to at least attempting to be here for 24 hours. And
wow.
So that's going to be fun to see the endurance of folks and see who lasts. And, yeah, I mean, it is an event. And so we're hoping, you know, people can treat it as such and really take advantage of it.
So how long are you going to be there?
I think I have made the commitment to be here for 24 hours.
You are a gentleman and a scholar and a marathoner, apparently. So,
you know what? There's a quote that keeps coming to mind, and it's a quote from Scarface. Nothing exceeds like excess. And
oh, thank God. I thought you were going to say something else. That's good.
Yeah, no. So, I, you know, this is a bit excessive, but anyway, it's for good reason.
Yep. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you want a road trip down to IU, or, you know, where can people go to get ticket information and get ready for a true movie marathon?
Sure. You can visit our website, which is very easy to remember, cinema.indiana.edu. And there are no tickets, so you just show up. So you look at the schedule, look at the times, show up. We're going to seat up to 260 people for, you know, at any point throughout the night. So show up, camp out, have a great time.
Will there be treats?
You know, we don't have treats planned,
okay.
And so we might have to think about that.
So I would not be surprised if somebody comes in with Chinese takeout or pizza boxes. You've been warned.
Okay, thanks. We'll be prepared.
Dude, we got to run to the Mushroom before we go to IU Cinema.
That would be sweet.
So, yes, that's John Vickers, IU Cinema Director and Good Sport. Just a reminder, Philip Seymour Hoffman Festival starting 4 o'clock on February 18th, running through the 19th until about 6 p.m. on February 19th. Jack Goes Boating, The Savages, The Master, Mission Impossible 3, Almost Famous, A Late Quartet, Doubt, Synecdoche, New York, Magnolia, Boogie Nights, Capote, and Owning Mahoney. Man, I wish I was down in Bloomington. I wish I could just, you know, say goodbye to the job and the family for a couple days and just kind of go hang out.
Going to go hang out at the union for 26 hours.
And then they'll think of your dad. It's so nice that you visit with your son on campus. All right. We have Chris Lloyd queued up, right?
Yeah, we do.
All right.
Doing our the annual show of Dead People We Like.
There's a pretty big one this week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Yes.
No, we don't. And it's a busy week, actually, and a couple of biggies.
We've had a couple busy weeks.
We had a couple busy weeks. But joining us in studio, fresh from work, and the Huskies are now taking a rest out in the parking lot, but Fair Sweet Bianca. Bianca Slagle, hello, dear.
Hello, Matthew.
And believe it or not, and this really shouldn't be a shock to anybody, but Bianca has seen more Shirley Temple films than I, and that's why you're...
I'm the film critic today.
Shirley Temple what? Correspondent.
Not really.
In reassignment.
Shirley,
that's
yeah,
not
we
a bad.
Know.
Well, we're trying to come up with something because I don't want you to be the chick flick correspondent because that's a little condescending and kind of wrong. But we have to find something, and we don't want you to be a correspondent based on movies based on sappy literature. So we'll find something.
I like sappy literature. Though.
Do you want to be the sappy?
I was thinking Hunger Games since Twilight's done now.
Well, then that will be over, and then we'll have to come up with a new title.
Divergent. That's the new one.
The Divergent
in.
Correspondent?
Yes.
Well, all these based on literature.
Yeah, I know.
Though.
Well, we got to come up with a title. Something that will stick. So
literature young teen literature based correspondent
by the 20 something lady.
Yeah.
Okay. So Bianca, you have a Shirley Temple box set. Fill us in on some of your favorites from that collection.
Well, actually, I guess I should start. I've been watching Shirley Temple's probably for the past 20 years or
That's
so.
Good, because if I watched Shirley Temple films when I was a kid, I'd have gotten beat up.
You know, I get laughed at sometimes. People,
yes, but people laugh is not beating.
True. Well, I think it was about 7 years ago I needed DVD Shirley Temple films because I only had the VHSs, and
yes,
those didn't work. So I was at Costco with my brother, and he's like, "What do you want for Christmas?" And I was
That's
like,
exactly how he sounds,
yes,
by the way.
"What do you want for Christmas?"
Go so, Patriots.
So I pointed at the box set, and I said, "That." I said, "I don't have those." So I think it was like a 15-movie box set, but which included the following: Baby Take a Bow, Bright Eyes, A Little Colonel. Colonel. Curly Top, The Littlest Rebel, Captain January, Dimple, Stowaway, Wee Willy Winky, Heidi, Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, Little Miss Broadway, Just Around the Corner, The Little Princess, Susanna the Mounties, Little Bluebird, and Young People, my favorite of which is Bright Eyes.
Okay.
And wait, that runs from 34 to what?
1934 to 1940.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did quite a bit
but
of work.
That's
in
just
there.
The box set. That yeah. doesn't yeah. include all of those films.
Now did you watch Heidi near the about halfway through the fourth quarter of the
no,
Super Bowl?
No, actually, Heidi is
look it up,
the
folks.
Heidi was the first one that I saw ever. That was actually what introduced me to Shirley Temple films. And what I've actually found out is that most people who are introduced to Shirley Temple films have all seen Heidi. That's like the first one. That's the introductory movie to Shirley Temple for some reason.
And don't bring it up to Super Bowl fans. But
it's
yeah.
kind of like Tarantino and Pulp Fiction.
And then us hipster D-bags over in the back going, Jackie Brown.
Jackie Brown's better.
But yeah, Bachelor in the Bobby Soxers, Shirley's best work because she's more mature that way. She's working with Cary Grant's better.
I also wanted to add.
Yes.
In addition to Meet Me in St. Louis.
Uh-oh.
Shirley Temple Films.
Are the stuff. Okay, thank you. I was just want to make sure you don't get caught up in the whirlwind of that. So, now, of the later films, because I'm older, so her later films like The Story of Seabiscuit, Mr. Belvedere Goes to College, not the TV show, Fort Apache. I gotta get some John Ford films to you once your Kobe pile is smaller. But
that was a John Wayne, correct?
John Wayne, Henry Fonda. And this is one of the few times Fonda played kind of a heavy. This is 1948. So this is 20 years before Once a Time in the West. Is one of his cavalry films. John Ford, of course, directed it. There was also that Hagen girl. So she had blossomed into a young lady. She also did The Bachelor and the Bobby Soxer with Cary Grant. Hi, Helen. It's Helen's boyfriend. So, yeah, she wound up doing a few. And then, of course, just became a diplomat and got two little Oscars, one for each ear. I remember she got a special honorary Oscar for her humanitarian work and for her career, and they look like little earrings.
Didn't she get, like, a little mini Academy Award is that what you're talking about?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Okay. So, anyway, so, yeah, a lot of films in such a short period of time. So,
and we're looking at the filmography, 28 films between 1932 and 1934.
Yes, and not jacked up on coke and pills. So, so congrats, Shirley. Do we have the music? Do you have the tune?
Yes, we do.
Do you have the tune?
Yes, we do.
Better play it.
Before we sign off, our little star has another number for you. What would you like to sing for us?
What would you like me to sing, Mr. Smithers?
Well, I'm sure everyone would like to hear you sing the songs that have made a lot of people happy.
All right. My dear radio audience, now I shall do some of the songs I've had the pleasure of introducing to you. It was not so very long ago when you heard this little ditty on your radio. On the good ship, Lollipop, it's a sweet trip to a candy shop where bonbons play on the sunny beach of Peppermint Bay. And do you remember animal crackers in my soup? Monkeys and rabbits, loop the loop, casualty, but I have fun swallowing animals one by one. And I never ever will forget my grandest thrill, the very first time that I sang. An ordinary day becomes a holiday when I'm with you. I have lots of toys, but I don't want to play. Yes, and I'll never forget it, I sat on my daddy's lap and whispered, "Oh, Daddy, how I miss you." you're busy all your life. I long to hug and kiss you. Marry me and let me be your wife. But it's great to reminisce when I sang to my.
So let's raise our bowls of animal crackers in our soup to the beautifully talented Shirley Temple.
I have saltines. Matches my personality. All right, we have a few other people of note. Sid Caesar, of course, you know, did some films, of course, but more groundbreaking work in television. Go to YouTube and find Sid Caesar, your show of shows. But one of his films just got released on Criterion DVD and Blu-ray. It's A Mad, 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 Mad World from 1963, which featured Spencer Tracy and the rest of the Screen Actors Guild at that time. The Busybody, The Spirit is Willing, Airport 75, Silent Movie. He was the studio chief. Really fun physical work there. The Cheap Detective. This one's for Melissa. He was, of course, the Coach Calhoun in Grease and Grease 2, which nobody needed.
Still greasy.
Still greasy. Yeah, more grease, more whatever. Fiendish Plot of Dr. Fu Manchu and Chief Caveman in History of the World Part 1. Probably the last thing of note besides comic book, the movie, but Mr. Ellis in Vegas Vacation. So, but Sid, nice movie work, even better TV work. And speaking of TV, I am always intrigued when a famous TV actor passes to see what films they did. Ralph Waite, who we all know as Papa Walton from The Waltons, going through his first big film title from 1967. He was one of the prisoners in Cool Hand Luke, not George Kennedy. Also did The Sporting Club, Five Easy Pieces, The Pursuit of Happiness, Lawman with Burt Lancaster, Chatto's Land with Charles Bronson. He was in Trouble Man. Seeing Pa Walton as a bad guy in Trouble Man is really fun. Also worked with Charles Bronson in The Stone Killer and then directed the film On the Nickel in 1980. We also have Danish director Gabriel Axel, who died February 9th at the age of 95, best known for the 1987 award-winning foreign language film Babette's Feast. Anybody who loves cooking and loves cinema, well, first off, you'd be listening to the show. One of our favorite guests, Robert Irvine, this is one of his favorite films involving cooking, and it's about a young woman who works for Three Sisters, not the place in Broad Ripple. But it turns out to be when the film's climax is the title of the movie, and as the film starts, it is very black and white, and then there's more shades of gray. And then when it comes to the dinner, it's in full color. So those are there. So anyway, thank you so much, everybody, for all of your work there. Now, we have a few minutes for some titles on DVD and Blu-ray this week. The big title for me on DVD and Blu-ray this week is my number one film of 2013. If we had time, I'd have Harvey Keitel screaming, "Where were you?" because not enough people saw this. My top film of 2013 was Robert Redford's film, All Is Lost. Yes. For those who didn't want the heavy subtext and gravity, and just wanted somebody stranded, this is the film for you.
I kind of want to see someone stranded.
Sandra,
don't want to be hit over the head with a message.
Yeah, Sandra Bullock's born again. Yeah, I get it. Blah, blah, blah. Well, this is, yes, she crawls out of the muck. By the way, Bianca saw gravity on the plane from her vacation. And by the way, thank you for listening to us in Germany.
Yes.
We are now internationally heard. But it is the most tense film I saw, and it's no disrespect toward gravity. That made the bottom half of my top 10. But, you know, this year's film theme seems to be survival with Captain Phillips and 12 Years a Slave. And this film was extremely tense. It's my favorite performance from Redford. My favorite performance this year of Redford. One of his best. He only has a handful of lines, but this man is in his early 70s, and it's one of the most physically challenging films I've seen in a long, long time. Also out on DVD and Blu-ray, Kobe, I saw this film, and I think Bianca's interested in it, but I'm warning you, Austin Land with Kerry Russell in taking a vacation in a Jane Austen theme park.
I didn't see it.
It's okay, nobody did. There's also The Counselor, which was kind of a big letdown film despite the presence of Michael Fassbender, Penelope Cruz, Cameron Diaz, Brad Pitt, and I just had a brain freeze. That's terrible when you're doing live radio. Javier Bardem, directed by Ridley Scott. So, Ender's Game is out. whatever. All right, here's some, and the Armstrong lie. Yeah, he did. He's a big piece of trash. Here are some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Thank you, Fair Sweet Bianca. We appreciate it. Have fun tonight. Go see a good movie.
Thank
you deserve
you.
It.
I'm glad I was on. And shoes pop.
You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point, WFYI.org.